You're listening. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is April the 3rd, 2015. We have an exciting show lined up for you, and can't wait to get started. We have a terrific program on hand. Two great ladies are going to be joining me today. We're going to have Ann Cochran and Professor Christina Jeffrey joining me to talk about political asylum, refugee programs, and national security. But to just get started real quickly, those of you new to my program, I welcome you. I am a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration Naturalization Service. And ever since the attacks of 9/11, I have taken my show on the road, so to speak, to try to provide the perspectives and information that the mainstream media is not and apparently will not discuss, even as the threat of terrorism hangs over our head, not unlike Damocles' sword. There's a couple of websites I want to talk about, and then I want to get to my guests immediately. First of all, my own personal website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Of course, I'm sure you know that for many years I've been writing for a group called Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. Great organization. I have a couple of articles up on their website right now that we will talk about later. I also write for Progressives for Immigration Reform, Front Page Magazine. A couple of articles are out there on the Daily Caller, and also the Social Contract. Pardon me. So the whole point is, again, to get to the issues that the mainstream media is ignoring and all too often distorting. That said, ladies, welcome to the program. Christina, Ann, I hope you're having a blessed Good Friday, and for those of us celebrating Passover, of course, I wish all of you, whether it's a happy Passover, happy Easter. It's an interesting holiday season because both the first night of Passover and Good Friday coincide. So, again, showing us that we have much more that unite us than divide us, wouldn't you think?
Amen.
How's that?
I agree. I'm here, Michael. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's my pleasure to have both of you on. Why don't you give my audience a quick thumbnail sketch, and we'll start with Christina, because I know that you have a limited amount of time, and from what I understand, you're going to be able to stay with me, but I want to get Christina's perspective out there real quickly, so I want to know what mischief you've been up to, Christina. How's that?
Well, you know, mischief is in the eye of the beholder. I was just at a rally for Ted Cruz, who announced that he was going to get rid of the income tax and Obamacare. People were very excited about that. I asked him about the refugee situation, and he said that he's on the Judiciary Committee, and, of course, our Congressman Trey Gowdy is on the Judiciary Committee, and he said perhaps he and Trey could work together to protect us, protect our national security. That's his focus with the refugees. And, of course, that's your focus. Ann and I are moms and grandmoms, and we have a broad range of concerns about this colonization that's going on, this overwhelming of all of our systems with every way you can possibly bring in refugees, including now, if I understand this correctly, today's announcement means that not only will we pay for anybody's children in the four most unstable countries in South America, and their grandchildren and their parents to get on planes and fly to America and sign up for all of the benefits and even possibly retroactive Social Security benefits, although really that's hard to believe. And we'll pay for it all. We'll pay for their DNA test to prove that they're related to people here. But all you have to have, the only thing that you get for the DNA test is a free airline ticket. anybody under 21 who wants, from those countries, who wants to come here and can get here, they will get all the same benefits, except they won't get a free DNA test, and they won't, because there's no point in it. They're not claiming any connection. I mean, it's just, it's a massive movement of people, since it's not for the benefit of the people, I call it human trafficking.
It is human trafficking. In fact, I was on with the Fox and Friends last year. We were talking about, and it was incredible back then, and it was small scale compared to this massive government-sponsored invasion, is the only way I can describe it. You know, Michelle Malkin wrote a book about a decade ago that she called Invasion. I said, you know, she's overstating the issue. And back then she was. Today it would be an apt description. I think maybe she's got a crystal ball. But
maybe she's a prophet.
Well, the DNA testing has been used in Europe because of people claiming political asylum and familial relationships. And I agree with DNA testing if what you're trying to do is to make certain that people aren't committing fraud. Now what we are witnessing, and this is remarkable, and it goes to something that you and I discussed off the air earlier today, most Americans are incapable of critical thinking, or any kind of thinking, perhaps. I think the American people have an attention span shorter than goldfish. So it was like when I was on with Cavuto, and Neil said, well, you know, they got drones on the border. I said, drones can't make arrests, and we're not going to shoot at anybody. It's just a way of spending a ton of money to create illusions. It's a Potemkin village,
right,
if you will. And so now they're saying,
we're
doing DNA testing. For what purpose? If they come here and they're under the age of 21, we're going to say, welcome. So
Michael,
we're going to make certain that the families aren't coming with them. I mean, this is insanity.
Michael,
yes.
George Soros, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation are going to be giving away free tickets.
And so will the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. You know, on 9/11.
And probably the Islamic whatever it is society that pretends to be a charitable organization.
And I'm sure the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And what's so remarkable is that the legal fees for any alien who's here illegally will be paid for by the government. And I have to tell you, this is not an act of
compassion.
Giant
transfer of wealth.
Well, yes, and it's not about compassion for the illegal alien. It's about making certain that the lawyers who write the legislation in Congress get paid. You know, somebody once said to me, when a lawyer walks into a courtroom, his number one priority is not you, it's himself, that he gets paid. His number two priority is not you either.
I'm sorry to tell you this. I'm sorry to tell you this, but it starts in law school. That's the number one thing that they teach.
How to get paid. Yes, and number two priority is to make sure that the other lawyer gets paid, even above your needs, because he may never see you again, or she may never see you again, but they certainly know that as a school of sharks swim together, they will interact with one another in the future.
That's right.
So they make certain that their supposed opponent, quote-unquote, gets paid. If you're lucky, you are priority number three in that courtroom. So look at what we've done.
If you're lucky.
So look at what we've done. We've created a situation where we no longer have borders. I just wrote an article both for Californians for Population Stabilization and for Front Page Magazine. Communities are now hiring police officers who are not U.S. citizens. Some communities require that they have green cards. Some require that they have applied for citizenship. And some are actually, according to this USA Today article, willing to hire police officers who simply have employment authorization. Now, if you remember that young lady, America's top model, who was killed by this thug, as it turned out, and this was covered over in Great Britain, not here, okay? In Great Britain, the story ran immediately that he had been one of the dreamers. He had been granted rather employment authorization under the Deferred Action Program. So if all that police departments want for someone to be given a gun and a badge that, by the way, under federal law, they could take anywhere in the country, so it's not even just their community that's at risk, imagine if dreamers, because they've been granted employment authorization, are now being hired as sworn police officers. Imagine if a terrorist or a member of a drug cartel or other transnational criminal organization was given a firearm and a badge, what damage they could do throughout the country. In fact, if you look at the latest Tom Clancy movie, Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit, that was part of the storyline. I don't want to give the movie away. It's a good film. I recommend seeing it. I'm a big Clancy fan. But the guy hides a bomb in a van dressed up to look like a police vehicle, and it's not. So here we're going to be giving police vehicles to aliens who just maybe a year or two ago were actually illegally present in the United States. How do you vet these people? The approval rate for the DACA program runs at something like 97%, because there's no face-to-face interview, no field investigations. The fraud rate, according to the GAO, in the political asylum program has been at somewhere around 70%. And if you look at what the 9/11 Commission talked about, it's not the Mexican border that posed the biggest threat. It was the process by which we admit aliens into the country legally and then give them lawful status, especially political asylum. And yet you mentioned Ted Cruz. He talks about, I'm going to secure that border first. Well, I wrote an article in Front Page Magazine, and I called this program a deception. Because what about giving people lawful status without interviewing them, without knowing who they are, allowing them to have the keys to the front door of our country with no integrity to the process? This is
well, you've been saying that a long time, and I. Yeah, maybe somebody's. Maybe somebody's going to listen. I'm praying they will. But introduce Anne, because I'm so excited that she's on your show.
Anne Corcoran, I have to thank you for all the work you've been doing, sounding the alarm in your community and obviously elsewhere, because once you're on the internet, it's out there. So why don't you give my audience, because you can do it better than I can do it, a thumbnail sketch of your background, how you came to become involved in the immigration issue. And I found something interesting. You believe you're a member, you became a member of the Tea Party before there was a Tea Party, and you started off as a liberal. I'm a registered Democrat. The Democrats aren't Democrats. They've fallen off the edge of the earth. I think we should all join the Flat Earth Society. But this isn't about left or right, is it? This is about right or wrong. Any comments on that?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Let me mention one thing. When you talked about Ted Cruz, and Christina, it's fabulous that you were able to talk to him directly about this issue. Maybe you've planted a seed. But I wonder if Ted Cruz knows that his state of Texas is the top refugee resettlement state by far in the nation. In other words, these U.S. State Department is just pouring them into Texas. And one might wonder if they want to turn a red state blue eventually, if that's what they're after.
Oh, you wonder? By the way, I not to cut you up, but I have to say this. Gutierrez just held a town hall meeting 2 weeks ago in California in Spanish. If you wanted to speak English, there were headsets for, there were enough Anglos who showed up and drowned him out, because the people that were there were screaming "Si se puede," and they were screaming "USA." And it was videotaped because he refused to conduct the meeting in English.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. Let me also mention on the DNA testing before I get into my background, because this is very interesting. Back in 2008, we followed the Somali issues, the settlement of over 100,000 Somalis in the United States. And in 2008, surprise, surprise, the U.S. State Department discovered that as many as 20,000 Somalis got into the United States fraudulently, claiming relationships to people here. And the program, the Family Reunification for Somalia, was shut down for about 4 years when they weren't even taking them until they finally figured out that they were going to have to do some DNA testing. But needless to say, those 20,000 that got in here illegally were never found and deported.
No, and I'm sure by now they've brought their family members here also.
That's exactly right. That's what happens every time. Hey, listen, I was just minding my own business here in Western Maryland back in 2007. I live on a farm in a rural conservative county. And out of the blue, we learned in our county that the Virginia Council of Churches, which is a subcontractor of Church World Service, which is one of the major resettlement contractors in the United States, had brought 100 Meshkedian Turks here. They're Russian Turkish Muslims as refugees, and they really weren't taking care of them either. They basically were kind of dropping them off, and as well as some other refugees from other parts of the world. And some of us here in my county just wanted to understand, what is this governmental process that allows a Virginia church group to come across the border and drop off into Maryland and drop off some refugees? And so one thing led to another, and a friend told me, why don't you start a blog and what you learn, put on the blog, and here I am all these many years later, since 2007, writing almost every day on the refugee program, and I wouldn't even say that I'm an expert at it yet. This is a complicated and initially very secretive program that's going on in the United States with this refugee resettlement program. So anyway, it's become my life, and I love working with people like Christina around the country, putting our heads together. Your listeners should know that there is a plan to resettle refugees in Spartanburg, where Christina is from, and that's how we met. We met recently in South Carolina, and we've been talking about what can be done there. And I should say, where I live in Western Maryland, Hagerstown is the county seat, and we no longer have a refugee resettlement program here. And the reason we don't is because citizens ask too many questions and stirred up too much controversy, and the State Department shut the program down, sent the Virginia Council of Churches back to Virginia. So we don't have a program here, I'm happy to say.
Well, you know, Christina, here's something interesting. It's an amazing background, but you see, citizen activism is critical. That's what this democracy, this democratic republic of ours is supposed to be about. I just met you today for the first time telephonically, but at the end of most of my articles, at the end of my programs, I always like to make the statement that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's not just words. And, you know, for so long I've had people come up to me and say, well, what can I do? I'm just one person. And I have a simple answer. Read the history books, and I know Christina is a professor, history, political science, but I tell people, if you read the history books, if you look at, let's say, the Second World War, tens of millions of people were killed, right? Think of how many soldiers were out there, how many countries were devastated, and yet there's only a relative handful of names that pop up. Individual names make all the difference. If you think back to the founding of this great nation, it wasn't founded by millions. It was founded by a handful, primarily of men back then, because women weren't as politically involved. And it's marvelous that we do it with both men and women today, which is how it should be. But if you look at the history books, you think about Adams and Washington and Franklin. It's a handful of names. So when people say, what can I do? I tell them, go to the parks. Look at those statues of people on horses. They erected those statues to celebrate, to commemorate that individual who at a moment in history made a major change happen, did something that really had a positive impact. Everybody can empower themselves. When you start to talk about what you can't or won't accomplish, you've just defeated yourself. Nobody wants to make liars out of themselves. And when they say, well, I can't do anything about it, well, that's not going to work. We have to try to ask ourselves, what can we do? Because all of us are capable of making a huge difference if only we get off our rear ends and get involved. Would you not agree with me, Anne?
I absolutely agree with you. And I tell people all the time that they need to pick something and focus. They don't have to spend enormous, they don't have to spend 8 hours a day, and they sure shouldn't be pulled on 20 different issues, although it's tempting because our country is so, sorry for the expression, screwed up, but it's easy to be pulled in 20 different directions. But just pick one thing or two little things that you can do and plug away at it every day, bit by bit, just plug away and keep your balance and keep a positive attitude, and that you can change that one little thing over time.
It's a small river that created the Grand Canyon.
Right. Exactly. So
well, Christina,
your
time with us is limited today. So, Christina, let me just jump back over to you. I know you had also been a congressional candidate talking about trying to make a difference. And we actually
I did that twice, and the problem with that is it's not a little thing. That's the problem with being a congressional candidate.
No,
huge.
Certainly not a little thing. Certainly not. It's an amazing accomplishment just getting to the point where you got.
I'm a little person, so I'm going to concentrate on more little things because, you know, there's just huge amounts of money slushing around in congressional campaigns.
And, of course, that doesn't corrupt anybody, right?
It doesn't corrupt anybody. No, sirree.
I look at campaign contributions as a legalized bribe. You know, if a cop stops you for speeding and you offer him or her a 50, you're probably going to wind up wearing handcuffs. But if you can get
I'll
to the mayor of
not,
that town...
I'll tell you when it's not...
I'm just going to want to make the one point. If you can get to the mayor of a town during a campaign, especially, and give a significant enough contribution, I bet you can get that speed limit raised.
Well, that's all true. But you know what isn't? What isn't a bribe is your friends and family. When you raise money one person at a time, like I did in 1999,
right?
I had 3,500 donors. They were my family, my friends, former colleagues, gun owners, pro-lifers, and what's the other big group that that comes forward and does good stuff? My brain is not working. The religious right was then very well organized in 99.
Oh, no, I didn't mean by any, I hope you didn't misunderstand what I'm saying, but what I'm saying
no
today...
PAC contributions.
Okay,
yeah, it's,
but,
well,
but how
the,
often
the,
are the
I don't
PACs
know.
Out there?
I don't know that, I did get one or two PAC contributions, but I don't know, I'm not sure that that is specifically the problem. I really think, looking at that campaign where Eric Cantor. Yeah, where Eric Cantor got beaten. That was a grassroots campaign. It can still be done. People just have to realize that they are the sovereign people, and the sovereign people is a responsibility.
Well, you know, I had spoken to Dave Bratt. I spoke to Dave Bratt, the man who went on to defeat Cantor. And Cantor mm-hmm. really took an outrageous position on an important issue. And the issue that he staked out in a very wrong-headed way, and I was very clear when I spoke to Dave Brad about it, I said, this is a huge issue, is that Cantor favored the Enlist Act. The Enlist Act,
yeah.
If you remember it, was proposed by a congressman from California, Denham. And what the bill would have done would have been to permit illegal aliens to enlist in the military and be put on a short pathway to U.S. citizenship. And I said, why in the world would you want to take people who snuck into the country and provide them with access to military bases, weapons, and tactical training? What could possibly go wrong? You know, I know that nobody wants to put American kids in harm's way, but the reality is that defending the country is the responsibility of the citizenry, and opening the door to potential terrorists to join our military. And I had personal experience with criminals back in the late 70s, early 80s. We had a bunch of aliens from the Caribbean and from Panama, and they had all become involved with getting false ID. They were working in cahoots, if you will, with the recruiters for the Marine Corps. The Marine recruiters were being pressured into meeting quotas. They provided ID. These guys joined the Marines. As soon as they got tactical weapons training, many of them went AWOL, stole weapons, and then were committing commando-style bank robberies all over the New York City area. We put together an informal, an ad hoc task force. I was working with the New York City Police Department, ATF, and what was then the Office of Naval Intelligence. Now it's NIS, Naval Investigative Service. And we were rounding these thugs up. And it made a lasting impression. And I thought we should never, ever allow anybody into the military who is not legally present in the United States. You should have a green card before you're in the military, not the other way around. And so I told
Well, America's
Brad,
got great experience with
work.
That. America's got
Sorry?
Great experience with that. America has great experience with that because the British hired Hessians.
And how did
and
that
those
work
Hessians
out?
That did not work out so well.
That's right.
For the mightiest country in the world at the time. And we learned that, and we have never done that. And this is like the Democrats are bad about using the military for social experiments. This
yep.
is a Republican social experiment.
Yep. I mean, we've got to use common sense, but I went to Dave Bratt and I said, listen, what Eric Cantor is proposing threatens national security. Look what just happened at Fort Hood. Look at the other situations. Look at how we trained Los Zetas in Mexico, and they became the most pernicious and violent of all the drug gangs. These people had been the elite of the military and law enforcement in Mexico. We armed them, we trained them, and they went over to the side of the cartels, initially as enforcers, and then they woke up one day and said, why should we work for them? We can kill them and take over. And these were the guys mostly behind the beheadings and all the crazy violence that is associated with the Mexican drug trade to this day.
Yep. It's not smart.
Not very
smart.
Smart
country.
And so Eric Cantor found himself on the wrong end of a very important issue. And these are important issues. And borders do matter.
Very, very important.
And I'll tell you the other thing that you may not know. With citizenship, do you know that they no longer really do routine background investigations that we used to call good moral character investigations? They make a big deal if they actually run fingerprints.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, could you imagine Congress getting a good moral character investigation?
If they start doing it, they'll probably rule out the people with good character because they'd probably vote Republican.
Well, listen, I know that you're a Republican and I'm registered as a Democrat. They'd probably dump three quarters of the Congress if they did that on both sides of the aisle.
Well, it really is. It's a sad situation. My husband, graciously, I try to put my husband first, and we were going to be eating dinner during this time. He let me go to the cruise thing, and he's at his office, and he's not coming back till 8 o'clock. So I can just listen in on you guys because I think I've talked enough for my limited knowledge of what's going on. I just want to hear what you guys have to say about this refugee business and what they're really trying to do.
Well, Christina, I want to thank you for introducing me to Anne. Actually, I had bumped into her because of the article I wrote for the Daily Caller. I remember Turka Carlson providing me with, or I found her information, I think, when I was looking at the Daily Caller website was how that happened. But I want to thank you for making the introduction, for all the great work you do, and for being a great friend. And I hope to get down to Spartanburg soon. I'd love to be down there. And
there is a great demand for both of you to come and speak. And my little Palmetto House Republican women are trying to set something up because we really do, you know, I know Anne says it's grassroots and, you know, you really have to. But I think we've got a lot of excitement here now already, so it wouldn't be like you'd be coming down here to stir things up. Things are stirred up, and you could just be encouragers.
Well, and it's also important to understand what the facts are. Because, you see, very often government is very good at creating programs with deceptive names so it sounds terrific. I remember I was on with Lou Dobbs way back when he was over at CNN. I was probably on with Lou about 100 times. And one day Lou asked me, and you know, in that Lou Dobbs voice, Mike Cutler, what do you think of the virtual fence, the Secure Border Initiative Network? And I looked at Lou and I said, Lou, it will do exactly what it's supposed to do, cost a ton of money and stop virtually nobody. And unfortunately, I was right. The GAO verified it. And we see that with the drones on the border. I was on with Neil, and he talked about the drones. I said I'd rather have manned helicopters. Lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, there was a senator who was retiring, and he was the ranking member of Homeland Security. My brain just froze, and I can't think of his name at the moment. But he did a study. And they came back and said that they could not determine have information about a single arrest made because of the drone. They were essentially worthless. And I was told by a Border Patrol pilot that those
worthless, they're expensive.
Right, well, that's right. But their value in the program is worthless, and it's taking money from what could work. Do you know you could fly four-man choppers for what one drone costs? Now, if you're a Border Patrol agent on the ground and you're overwhelmed and you're being attacked, do you want a drone overhead taking beautiful color video of your getting attacked and, God forbid, murdered? Or would you like to have a chopper with armed agents on board who can sit down next to you and back you up?
No brainer. No brainer.
Okay, so why are we doing it? To create the illusion that we're doing what needs to be done, but making certain that the equation doesn't change. If you really want to know,
our representatives don't care, but they want to appear to care.
Right, and that's my point. So they want to be in two places at once, and this isn't quantum physics, so the only way they can do it is to squander the money on a program that sounds impressive, that achieves nothing. You know what I compare this with? Imagine hiring a house painter, and they're very courteous and polite, and every morning they come 10 minutes ahead of schedule, and they lay down their drop cloths, and they couldn't be nicer. And then you realize that 3 weeks into this project, they haven't finished painting your living room, and you realize they have empty paint cans. But they're charging you by the hour.
Oh, yeah.
How's that for an image?
That's an image. I got it.
Well, let me turn now to Ann. Christine, I want to thank you so much. I wish you and your family
it's
a happy Easter.
It's been such a pleasure. I'm going to just be quiet here and listen.
Okay, you do that. You just sit back and we'll go for it. Ann, I'm sorry that I held you off that way. I just wanted to make certain that
no
we
problem.
Did get... I've been friends with Christina going back about, 3 or 4 years now when I first met her at the first Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And so we have been...
Great. I've enjoyed listening to your conversation. It's great.
Well,
I appreciate it.
No, and I certainly consider Christina a great friend, and we conspire all the time to try to fix things. And we should all be doing this. And sometimes conspiring that way is a good thing, not an evil thing. So... how many people are working with you in Maryland?
Nobody.
Isn't that you're an army of one?
Actually,
is that the deal?
Well, my blog is just one. We already had our excitement, and that was 7 years ago here in the county, where as I started to say earlier, the settlement agencies, the U.S. State Department, everybody was here. I encouraged there to be a public meeting. They don't like public meetings. The State Department even sent its top two ladies to Hagerstown for this meeting. Me and my local girlfriends did a lot of research, and we knew the answers to questions before we asked them. The meeting was contentious.
Excellent.
We were given the a snow job, essentially, where they were, you know, the big lecture about we're a nation of immigrants and how can you people be so evil and racist and so on and so forth. When the meeting ended, and again, we didn't get very good answers, within 10 days, the State Department shut the program down here. The Virginia Council of Churches was sent back to Virginia, as I said. As they left town, they basically called us a bunch of unwelcoming boobs, and that was the end of it here. So I have been quietly researching day in, day out, the refugee program and writing my blog and building up a readership, and now the public is catching up with refugee resettlement. It's become a hot topic, and now all
Isn't
of a sudden I'm back.
Isn't it interesting, though, that instead of a conversation and answering questions that are entirely reasonable, I mean, Abe Lincoln, and I know that Christina is a huge fan of Abraham Lincoln, as I am, talked about a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So when the people come out and say, well, what are you doing, not for us, but to us, suddenly you're the bad guy. So here's a bit of advice. See how this works for you, because I've done this. You know, if you look at the abortion issue, it's pro-choice versus pro-life, because everybody knows that if you're anti-anything, you've lost. You may as well pick up your marbles and go home. When we talk about enforcing our immigration laws, we are immediately labeled as anti-immigrants. And since we are a nation of immigrants, we are against the culture of our own country. And foolishly, a lot of people who want immigration enforcement have allowed themselves to be labeled by their opponents. My degree was in communications, or as I prefer to say, I have a BA and BS. And one thing I've learned is you never allow your opponent to define you unless you want to lose, which is how, in part, Michael Dukakis lost to George Bush. If you remember, Bush called him a liberal, and instead of standing his ground, it was like, well, I'm a liberal on Thursdays, but not so much on Fridays and on Wednesdays. You know, well, wait a minute. Why are you doing that? So here's my advice. We're pro-enforcement. And I wrote an article where I said that if you're pro-enforcement, you are pro-immigrant, because the same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out also tell us who to admit. Every year, we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants into the United States. We give them green cards. They're immediately placed on the pathway to U.S. citizenship. Under our immigration laws, we have admitted roughly 1 million foreign students. Under our immigration laws, we provide for political asylum. So how, and by the way, under our laws, we naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens. These numbers are all greater than all the other countries on the planet combined. So how can you be anti-immigrant when you support the laws whereby aliens legally immigrate? And that's a very tough argument for the other side to have to contend with. And in fact, they know it's the showstopper. So we need to be careful about what we, how we define ourselves and our mission, and how we allow the others who are out there to try to define us. It's about being pro-enforcement to make certain that we protect American lives and indeed the lives of all people who are here and protect the jobs of American workers. How on earth is that anti-immigrant? The answer is it isn't.
Right.
And the other side hates when you start doing that.
I do understand what you're saying, but I will say that I do say we are bringing too many legal immigrants into the United States and from countries that hate us. And I had to tell you the truth, when people, and initially when I wrote my blog, I would get a lot of commenters telling me what a racist person I was and how awful
I
was.
Yeah, I get that also.
All of that. And I would come back to them and say, I want you to write for me an opinion piece that I will put in my blog and I will publish to explain to me why it is a good thing without giving me any guilt trips about religion or good being a good Christian or being a good, or that we're a nation of immigrants. I want you to tell me logically why we should be bringing 70 to 100,000 refugees and asylees here into the United States every year from countries like Somalia, Iraq, soon to be Syria. I want you to tell me why that is good for America. And do you know, when I ask people that, and nicely, and ask them to please write something for me to explain that without guilt trips, with
they
no,
disappear.
You know,
they go
disappear.
Away.
They, because they have no logical, they have no answer to that major question. And let me emphasize this again. We can talk about the numbers of other refugees, the poor Burmese Christians and the poor Bhutanese Hindus and stuff like that. We can talk about the numbers and whether the numbers are too high, which I think they are, because the impact on communities is being profoundly felt now. And
yep.
It has to do with overloaded school systems, health departments that are struggling, subsidized housing lists where the refugees are getting on lists for subsidized housing and disabled Americans are have to wait for years for any kind of subsidized housing in some towns in America. So there's huge economic questions that have to be asked and answered.
But
I mean, just yesterday.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
I was going to say, just yesterday, you might have seen it on Breitbart, the annual report came out for the refugee program for 2013. It's a long story, but the Office of Refugee Resettlement is required by law to submit an annual report to Congress within months of the close of the fiscal year. Well, I've been following this for seven. They were behind for years, but they're finally trying to catch up now, or making some effort to catch up. And the bottom line is, 88% of African refugees in the United States are on food stamps, and another 90% of Middle Eastern refugees in the United States are on food stamps. These are questions, they're big economic questions, and they're not finding employment either. It's a big joke that when we hear that they're finding plenty of employment. They aren't finding employment. You and I know they're not finding employment. So there are huge economic issues. So I ask people, what about the numbers and then the security issues? How on earth, just recently, the FBI testified in the House Homeland Security Committee, Congressman McCall's committee, that they cannot screen these Syrian refugees. The UN has picked out 10,000 for us right now. The State Department's been telling the whole world for the last year that we're going to bring 9,000 to 10,000 this year, and if they've got hit this roadblock where the FBI has said we can't screen these people, we don't know who they are. They're coming from a failed state. We have no way of screening them.
And that's the issue. Yeah. So let me address that.
Yeah.
What's happening? See, part of the problem that we have is everyone keeps on focusing on the Mexican border, and this is part of the trick. And Ted Cruz is excellent on that one. First, we're going to secure the Mexican border. And, you know, I really got into it with Cruz when I was in Washington, as we discussed off the air. Why are we fixated on the Mexican border? If you look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say, the terrorists who attacked us on 9/11 didn't run the Mexican border. They were legally admitted into the United States. The problem is that there is no integrity to any of the immigration processes. There have been headlines after headlines written about how after the fact the U.S. government was trying to locate terrorists that we admitted as refugees. There was a case involving an attorney in New York, an immigration lawyer, And this was really awful. Earl Seth David, I believe his name was. And what David did for 13 years was to commit immigration fraud. He brought in an estimated 25,000 aliens over a decade. Over 25,000. Purportedly they had jobs. Purportedly we knew who they were. Everything was fine. It turned out they had no jobs. When his license to practice law in New York was suspended because of the investigation, he fled to Canada. And when he got to Canada, guess what he did? He mailed in the applications and immigration processed them from Canada, even though his license had been suspended, and he apparently went to Canada fearing he was about to be arrested. But he had the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, the gall, to say, oh, I'll just mail in my applications. Well, he was ultimately extradited, and then he pleads guilty, and the people who worked for him, including one employee of the State of Labor Department who falsified documents, they each pled guilty to, I believe it was one count of mail fraud, one count of immigration conspiracy fraud, and nothing else. And there wasn't a single word about any effort being made to locate the more than 25,000 illegal aliens. And by the way, where did I find all this information? You're going to be shocked, maybe. It was on a press release issued by the Department of Homeland Security. This was a great success story because they indicted this guy on the two criminal count indictment, even though it involved 25,000 aliens. There was another guy by the name of Fezza Hazion. When I was on with Megyn Kelly right after the Boston bombing, I referenced this guy. He came from Eritrea. We don't hear anything about Eritrea, so I started doing some digging. It turns out that Eritrea wasn't only a hotspot and isn't only a hotspot for Al-Qaeda, but the U.S. military was planning to invade Eritrea because they were sheltering and facilitating the skullduggery of Al-Qaeda as they were training to kill Obama, believe it or not. Now, where did I find that information? In the British press. What did they have here in the United States about it? Absolutely nothing. So this guy, Fezza Hazion, he's also the subject of both a DOJ and an immigration press release. Ultimately, immigration took it down when I wrote about it. I guess they read it and said, gee, we better get rid of the press release. DOJ still has it up, to my knowledge. Fezza Hazion comes here by running the border with Mexico, claims political asylum. According to the press release, they granted him asylum within 6 weeks. He claimed he was running for his life in Eritrea. Guess what? He was actually in Guatemala smuggling Africans into the United States through Latin America, through Brazil, into the United States. Now, here's something that most people may not know. This is really very significant. Countries such as Nigeria are hotbeds for Al-Qaeda. This guy was moving, it was part of a ring, massive ring, that for something like $25,000 a person, I believe, I know it was a high figure, they were moving individuals through Brazil, through Latin America. Brazil is a hot spot for terrorism. The tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Argentina and Paraguay, is known for having terror training camps, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, perhaps today ISIS. So they're moving Africans, I'm not saying they were terrorists, but it's certainly very suspicious, through that part of Latin America where there are terror training camps. This guy comes from a country that's top on the list for involvement with terrorism. And what did they do? They allowed this guy to plead guilty to one count of alien smuggling. And again, no indication of any effort being made to go after the people that he smuggled in. And they did not charge him with lying on his application for asylum. If they had, they could deport him when he gets out of jail. They did not prosecute him for committing fraud. What does that mean? If he gets a year or two in jail, pardon me, which is probably all he'll get, when he gets out, he is still free to stay in the United States. So understand that this failure of immigration has a direct nexus to, God forbid, the next terrorist attack. And let's remember that it was only 19 terrorists who did the level of damage, not only to America, but to the world on September 11th. We are talking about the movements of hundreds of thousands of potential enemy combatants, saboteurs, what have you. If you go to the FBI website, they make a big deal about how they had grabbed about a dozen Nazi saboteurs during the Second World War. They came out of submarines. They came in through Miami. They came in through Long Island, and they stopped them. A couple of them had become naturalized citizens or resident aliens. Two of them were put in jail. The others were summarily executed after they were found guilty just about a month after they were caught. Here's the problem. The FBI understood the issue, made a big deal about it. Today, you don't need submarines to come here with the visa waiver program, thanks to the Chamber of Commerce. We've gone from 26 visa waiver countries on 9/11 to 38 visa waiver countries as of a year ago, last March 31st. Chile became number 38 on the hit parade. All they need to do is get a passport and take an airline flight, and they can land at any airport in the United States, stroll through the terminal, hook up with their buddies, and go to work in a garage that night on a device. How chilling is that thought?
Right, right. Well, one of the things when you were talking there, it occurred to me that maybe some of your listeners don't know the difference between what we call a refugee and what would what is political asylum. And the words are bandied
about. I'll let you go ahead and explain that.
Yeah, no. I wanted to, in regards to the Sarnier brothers in Boston, they were political asylees, or they were granted asylum. They got, their family got into the United States on its own and then asked for asylum. The refugees that we were talking about and that Christine and I have been talking about are chosen abroad by the United Nations now,
yep,
almost exclusively.
Yep.
And the list is handed over to the U.S. State Department. They're technically screened abroad, but so often, as we just talked about, how do you screen somebody from Somalia who's been wandering around Africa? Or even, we're now taking Somalis from places like Malta that got to Malta illegally, or even Malaysia, they've gotten to Malaysia illegally, and we pick them up as refugees to the United States. How on earth are we screening them? A few years ago, your listeners may be aware of the Iraqi refugees who were resettled in Kentucky, who were found to be connected with terrorists in Iraq and are now spending life in prison, I believe it's life, for their misdeeds. And in that case, we were told they were screened, but in fact, one of them had fingerprints on a shard of a piece of an IED, and we never put it together until they were here in the United States. Of course, they lied on their refugee application and said they weren't involved with any.
And the Tsarnaev brothers, for the record, they came on student visas, I believe, both of them did, and as soon as they got political asylum, which means I have a credible fear that I cannot return to my home country, what do you think they did as soon as we gave them lawful status? They hopped on airplanes and went home.
Right.
And what's so remarkable...
Well, we hear that all the time with...
Well,
that's
prima facie evidence of fraud. You know, I was... Let me just make the point.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, when I was in Florida with the David Horowitz Freedom Center, I'm very pleased to be a columnist for them. And I was talking to Jeff Sessions and Louis Gohmert about that. They're great leaders in the Congress. They're exceptional. We were talking about this, and I said their sister was actually still out there wandering around a year after the April 15th bombing at the Marathon. And you would have thought that they would have rolled her up. I mean, you know, we talk about low-hanging fruit. I coined an expression. I said she was fruit in the basket. They knew that the family had lied about asylum. If you say, I cannot return to my home country, and there is no regime change, and as soon as we give you lawful status, you voluntarily, willfully get on an airplane and go back to the country you claim you could not return to, do you think it's safe to presume that you lied on the application? I think that the answer to that is a no-brainer. They did nothing about her. The way that she came to the attention of law enforcement was she threatened to blow up her ex-boyfriend, so the police arrested her. And immigration, the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call DHS, was left standing there scratching their heads. There is no integrity to the process. There was an article about how the military overseas is having a problem properly screening soldiers who are working with our soldiers. Now, if you can't screen soldiers in their home country, how on earth do you screen refugees who were dumped on us, if you will, by the UN? And something about the UN you should also know about. The United Nations, the High Refugee Command, is the agency of the UN that does this to us. But the UN, when you go to look at this idea of remittances, and nobody on Fox News or any other program will talk about the money wired out of the country by foreign workers or by refugees or anybody.
Right, the money is huge.
And so they brag about, if we could implement comprehensive reform, we could increase the remittances. Last year, as much as $200 billion flowed from the United States to the third world. When you look at what that also costs us in displaced American wages, workers losing their jobs, going on benefit programs, this more than accounts for the annual increase in the national debt, period. And by the way, how does the UN categorize or discuss foreign workers who travel from one country to the other? Do you know the term that they use, Ann?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, we get assailed for using the word alien, which has no negative connotation at all. Legally, all it means is any person, not a citizen or national. There's nothing derogatory about it. It's that it provides clarity, and when you're a con artist, the last thing you want are the bright lights on. The UN calls them migrant stock, as in live stock. Okay?
Oh, wow.
So if you want to talk about dehumanizing, could you imagine a more dehumanizing term than the term migrant stock? Doesn't that tell you all you need to know about the United Nations?
Yes, that's incredible. It really is.
Migrant stock. It shocked me. The General Assembly has a report out, and that term appeared numerous times. It wasn't even a mistake. That is their term of art, migrant stock. I want you folks out there to think about that. What's more offensive, alien, which simply means like an inalienable rights, you know, alien, any person, not a citizen, or migrant stock? Why do they call them worker bees or whatever, exploitables? It's really, in my thinking, it's the equivalent of using the term slave.
You know, we've been talking about the refugee program, but listeners should know, too, that we have other legal programs that are horrible, in my opinion. One is the diversity visa lottery, which I don't
know
tons about, but that we let 50,000 more people into the country legally through that program.
We're not diverse enough. We're not diverse enough,
no.
Ann. But you see, here's the
problem. Right, no, we're not.
But here's the problem. When I go to speak at locations, I do events all over the country, and if anybody becomes aware of any, please get a hold of me through michaelcutler.net. I'd love to come to your neck of the woods. I'm going to be with General Paul Vallely next week. In fact, on Monday morning, I'm going to be on Newsmax to talk about the threat of Iran and Hezbollah operating in Latin America, in our hemisphere, and inside our country. But people introduce me and say, Mike Cutler's going to talk about illegal immigration. That's not true. I'm going to talk about immigration because our legal system has no integrity. So I don't care if you come here by a rubber boat from Cuba. I don't care if you come here on a tourist visa or you're running the border. The bottom line is that you're coming here. And when I did a hearing for Jackson Lee, they had a hearing on smuggling, and I insisted that they cover visa fraud as part of smuggling. It was a big argument. I wrote a memo to Jackson Lee, who is the ranking member of the Immigration Subcommittee, and I said a properly managed visa program, in essence, pushes America's borders out to the embassies and consulates where the visas are issued. When you put a gate on your property, when you put fencing on your property, you don't put it against the wall, you move it out to the furthest extreme of your land. This moves our borders out to our embassies and consulates. You know, I prevailed. And now, very often, when they do a hearing about visas, do you know that they include the phrase pushing out America's borders? So it's not just about illegal immigration. It's making certain that the entire immigration system has integrity. And where it starts really isn't so much the Mexican border as interior enforcement. Interior enforcement is the equivalent of the outfielders in a baseball team. You can't win a baseball game if you don't have people covering left field, center field, and right field. If you could hit the ball over the infielders' heads and the outfielders aren't there, that's an automatic in-the-park home run. That's exactly where immigration is now. So it's about name-calling, it's about vilification, and it's about deception. And so what I've been doing, and you're doing something that's really important, and I'd love to have you come back on in the near future to continue the conversation, what we really need to also look at is the legal system, so-called, because it lacks integrity. Look, hasn't anyone ever driven so badly you say to yourself, where in the world did that idiot get his driver's license? We're doing the same thing with green cards, but this gives these folks the key to America's front door. and there's no integrity to it.
Right, right.
Your thoughts?
Well, I tell people all the time that if somebody says to you, I'm okay with legal immigration, it's illegal that I have a problem with, I say, gently punch them in the nose because they don't know what they're talking about.
But the legal system is illegal. It's illegal, but it's illegal by design of our own government. Our own government wants it to fail, wants it to lack integrity. So they create the illusion that we have a legal system. But the legal system, if you look at the grounds for excluding aliens, it's aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer severe mental illness and are either extremely violent or sex offenders, fugitives from justice, people have committed heinous crimes, murder, rape, arson, gun runners, the list goes on. Aliens who are involved with human rights violations, war criminals, spies, terrorists, and then we get to aliens who would be a public charge or if they worked with displaced American workers. There's nothing about race, religion, or ethnicity. It's not unreasonable to say these are the standards that need to be met. But you see, to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to the politicians, to the banks, to all these people that are making tons and tons and tons of money off of all this, what they need to do is to plow ahead. When I was at a hearing in Washington before the House Judiciary Committee, I had a representative of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce say to me, Mr. Cutler, we don't need those borders. They are an impediment to my wealth. And he was furious. He said, those borders need to come down. I said, they are our first and last line of defense. He said, nonsense. You're keeping me from wealth. And he was furious.
He actually said that.
Yeah, off the record.
Wow.
It was during a recess. He said, you are keeping me from true wealth. I said, I'm sure you're starving now. He says, oh, I'm worth a ton of money, but I could be worth so much more if you'd knock it off.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible to hear.
I did a hearing in Indiana, and the representative of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said, I'm going to get up and say something that you folks probably have never heard, but I'm going to be blunt. We need immigrants, period. Legal, illegal, from every country on the planet, bring them on by the millions. The more we have, the more money we can make. And everybody was just sitting there with their mouths hanging open.
That's incredible. Well, in the refugee field, I have discovered noticed that the meat packers are driving a lot of this, and big hotels that need workers.
There's something called the
meat
Discover America Partnership. The Discover America Partnership is where the U.S. Chamber of Commerce partnered with the Hotel, Hospitality, Travel, and Manufacturing Associations. They are the ones who have pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into pushing for an expansion of the visa waiver program. And it's remarkable because one of the things the 9/11 Commission talked about was the need to make it more difficult to get visas to properly screen people. Under the visa waiver program, the screening process is just sliced apart. You know, today, Ann, everybody talks about income equality, and everybody jumps up and down because the masses, as we used to say back at Brooklyn College, the masses are asses. And everyone seems to think that they will benefit from wage equality. And it's the rallying cry of the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton has been out there. I mean, what difference does it make, right? On top of it, you have the comedians talking about it, Bill Maher, John Oliver over at HBO. Income equality, income. Well, you know what income equality is? Alan Greenspan addressed it when he testified for Chuck Schumer on April 30th, 2009, when he went before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. And he said that we were paying a wage premium to skilled American workers. Now, under the immigration law, a skilled American worker is a worker who generally has an advanced degree, whether it's usually in the STEM field, is considered to be the skilled workers, the high-tech industries. And he said, we're paying them a wage premium because they're not being made to compete with foreign workers. He said, if we could open up those quotas like Ted Cruz wants, he didn't say Ted Cruz, but I'm telling you, because he's the one that wants a 500% increase. Comprehensive reform would have only been a 300% increase. He said, we could greatly reduce the wage premium being paid to what he called the privileged elite, so that we could greatly reduce income inequality between Americans with skills and Americans without skills. What was he saying? The guy with the PhD should not really be making much more than the guy who drops out of high school. So no one is asking when they hear wage equality, well, who are you going to make me equal to? Bill Gates or the guy down the block who lives in a trailer park?
Right.
How astounding is that?
Yeah.
This is all about money.
It is. It's all about money. It's all about money. Even for these churches resettling refugees, it's all about money. They're being paid to do this. It's all about money.
It's absolutely astonishing. And when Americans lose their jobs and the economy is in the tank, look, how in the world, I was watching TV earlier today, and they came out with the labor statistics, and they keep adhering to this nonsense that we have a 5.5% unemployment rate. You know, this is not the America that I grew up in as a kid. We used to make fun of Russia with their two news services, Pravda and Izvestia. You know, lie and bigger lie. Well, do you really think we have a 5.5% unemployment rate? How do you blithely ignore the plight of tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed America and have the chutzpah, the nerve, the gall to say, oh, they don't count. So if we don't count them, we have an unemployment rate of 5.5%. You know, my analogy, Anne, imagine you have a child who has not been doing particularly well in science and comes home one day and says, boy, you need to be proud of me. I just got a 90 on my science test. And so you get real excited and you go to that test, and sure enough, he got 90 on the first question and zeros on all the other 19 questions. That's as meaningful
right.
as that 5.5% unemployment rate, but they use that number routinely. And they talk about the poverty line being at $21,000 or $22,000 a year for a family of four. I don't know that we could keep a dog on $20,000 a year in New York City. I mean, think about
right.
the outrage. And so when they talk about, and Obama goes out there and no one challenges him. It takes my breath away, Ann. Obama will say we need to have a 10-10 an hour minimum wage to attain wage equality. Well, I wrote an article for Progressives for Immigration Reform, and I said, look, do the math. We may disagree. I believe in raising minimum wages. I really do. Because one way or the other, these folks are going to be subsidized. I would rather that somebody make more money in their pay than they make by the backup, the welfare safety net programs, because then their labor becomes more meaningful to them. So you become more disciplined when you realize that the greatest amount of your income comes from a paycheck, not because you're breathing. So I tend to believe in raising minimum wages, and that's a debate perhaps for another day. But the point is, where will 10-10 an hour get you if you're looking at wage equality? If you do the math, it's $21,000 a year. And even at this $15 an hour, I don't know how that came up for the fast food workers. So now we're talking about a little bit more than $30,000 a year. Is that wage equality? Of course not. But people will parrot whatever they're told. That's how they killed people with cigarettes. Winston tastes good, like a cigarette should. All I know is my dad, who died of lung cancer, smoked those god-awful Chesterfields, and every time he lit up, my chest burned from the fumes. Cigarettes don't taste good, but people buy into it. It's a slogan. You repeat it frequently. It's the concept of the big lie that the Nazis used and created the Holocaust during the Second World War that decimated my family. You tell a lie, and you repeat it as frequently as possible, and pretty soon people believe it. If you want the border secured, you're anti-immigrant. If we could only secure the Mexican border, then everything is okay. And when you question people, you know, when I get up in front of a room, I say, how many border states do we have? And it's astonishing. Almost everybody in the room starts looking at their hand, and they start pointing to their fingers. And they go, well, there's Texas. And the guy turns to his wife, Mabel, what's that state next to Texas? Is that New Mexico or Arizona? And she says, oh, they're both border states, Harold. Okay. And that's what you watch going on. And you
right.
know, it's astonishing.
Right. Well, yes, I would too. I'd probably count on my fingers too.
But you understand what they've done?
Right.
This is like the Calais deception of the Second World War. Are you familiar with the Calais deception?
No, I'm not. You're getting out of my expertise here.
All right,
maybe
I'll tell you real quick.
Expertise.
I'll just give it to you real quick, and maybe the audience will find it interesting. We're a little bit into overtime, but that's okay. We have another couple of minutes. I'll just do this quickly. I don't want to keep you. But during the Second World War, as they were putting the plans together for Operation Overlord, D-Day, Eisenhower and the British generals understood that if the Germans concentrated their focus on the beaches of Normandy, we wouldn't have been able to do it. They would have been able to repel our forces. So they needed a diversion. So they took the body of a poor soldier who had been killed, dressed him up in a suit, handcuffed a briefcase to his wrist, put bogus top secret documents in that briefcase that said we were going to attack through Calais. And then to build it up after they put this guy's body in a torpedo tube and fired him towards the German shore. They find his body wash up. They believe that this was a for real. And what they did was, because they didn't have nighttime surveillance the way we do today with satellites and so forth, they had inflatable tanks and inflatable trucks, and at night they'd move them into position, and they would take actual tank treads and make treads on the beach so it looked as though the tanks had been driven there, because if they just simply put them there, they would have said those can't be real tanks. So they actually made what looked like tank tracks in the sand leading up to these inflatable tanks. So when the Nazis flew overhead and took surveillance photographs by the light of day, it looked like there were hundreds and hundreds of tanks massing ready for an invasion at Calais. So on D-Day, half of Germany's forces were focused on Calais and not Normandy, and that's how we succeeded.
Right.
So here, it was called Operation Fortitude, also known as the Calais Deception. Here, the Calais deception isn't bogus. The Mexican border is important. I don't want anyone to walk away and say, well, this guy's crazy. He doesn't want the border. Sure, it should be. But I compare the Mexican border with a wing on an airplane. Without a wing, an airplane will not fly, of course. But a wing by itself goes nowhere. And if you could put the deflector shield for the Starship Enterprise along that Mexican border, and if it could reach down 1,000 feet below the Earth's surface and reach all the way up into orbital distance, over 100 miles up, and nothing, not even a mosquito, could get by, you will not have solved the immigration problem. Because when you give people green cards, you open up a hole in that force field and let them in. They're coming in through every international airport, through the Canadian border, by stowing away on ships. And in fact, the great bulk of narcotics used to come through Florida, not Mexico. The action moved to Mexico when the Coast Guard, the U.S. Coast Guard, started to pursue, and Customs started to pursue those speedboats that were called cigarettes that were bringing in huge quantities of cocaine from Colombia. So what did the Colombians do? They partnered with the Mexicans. It also insulated them from law enforcement because our people were extraditing their drug cartel leaders in Colombia. They gave it over, part of the trade, to Mexico, and they said, look, we'll give you part of the profits. But they then became the insulator. I used to do surveillance. I was up at DEA. We were arresting all kinds of drug dealers. I did this for half my 30-year career. The neighborhood where this all was concentrated on, Jackson Heights, Queens, New York, along Roosevelt Avenue, used to be predominantly Colombian. It's now Mexican because they had to move the action from the shoreline of Florida to the Mexican border. And don't you think that if we made the Mexican border airtight, that they would just simply find a different route into the United States? The biggest issue is the way we give lawful status to aliens. And so you've got cities like New York giving official identity documents to illegal aliens, even though we can't verify their true names. The terrorists on 9/11 in the aggregate used more than 300 false aliases. And often the documents were actually issued to them by city, state, and federal government agencies. Driver's licenses in particular. That was the Real ID Act. That's why they devised that. So now you've got cities operating in violation of that and the federal government cheering them on. See, the real solution to all of this would be to have an administration in place that turns around and tells sanctuary cities, you do this, we're going to prosecute you for aiding, abetting, harboring, shielding, inducing, and encouraging, because it's a felony. But they're not. When Arizona sought to enact SB 1070, what did they do? They sued them. I worked with the law firm retained by Governor Brewer to defend them against the lawsuit. Why did they sue them? For daring to enact immigration laws that paralleled the federal statutes. Why? Because the federal government refuses to enforce the laws that are on the books. And when they talk about reform, Ann, you have to hyphenate the word. It's not reform, but reform. Make over. Make new. What do they want to make new? Open the door to all the world's high-tech workers. Why? To drive down the wages. That's why middle-class wages continue to decline. By the way, that's also why our deficit keeps going up. Because not only are we shrinking our tax base, but we're bringing in more foreign workers who want to send more money home. Do you know that globally India sends the most money back home? Indians send the most amount of money back to their home country. Last year it was between $60 and $70 billion with a B. This is what globalism,
Michael,
is about, a race to the bottom.
Michael, this is so bleak. I'm sure your listeners are going, oh, my gosh, now what do we do? What do we do?
Well, you're the role model for what we do. And that's what I was just going to get to.
Yeah.
But look what you did by asking the question. You know, I'm Jewish, and Jews answer a question with another question. So maybe I'm a little bit predisposed by DNA. But by asking questions, by attending town hall meetings, and when you confront the congressman, you need to go with a series of your friends. And there are strategies we can talk about, which is what I do at my town hall meetings that I hold, my public events. Mm-hmm. There are ways of coming up with a way of dealing with a, forgive the redundancy, lying politician. You know, there are ways of doing this. Back before I became an agent, I was originally an engineering major and wound up with a degree in communications. But the one thing that I learned was on the debating team is the art of the question. There are strategies for dealing with your opponent. And these politicians, unfortunately, are our opponent. And so they've got to be confronted.
And they don't like questions. None of them like questions. The state agent, the federal agencies don't want questions. Nobody wants questions.
No.
Michael, it's been lovely.
If they don't want to take questions, then we need to vote them out of office. And I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. And I want to thank you so much for coming on my program. I know that we're in the midst of religious celebrations, but this is such an important mission. I think you're doing God's work. How does that sound to you?
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, Christina, you're still there. My goodness gracious. She's been so quiet.
I'm listening and learning, so I can learn one. I can watch one, do one, teach one.
Well, you're the professor, Christina.
That's right.
Ladies,
that's why
I
have to be doing the most learning.
Well, I really want to thank both of you for being here. I have to have you back really soon.
Well, thank you. I think you should do a program on how to conduct a town hall meeting. You know, I've been in South Carolina so long, I don't know what's going on in Maryland and other places. But did the Tea Party kill off congressional town hall meetings? I mean, I haven't seen one since 2009.
Well, you know, I don't know. But let me ask you a question, Christina. When your work as a professor, if the chairman of your department said, Christina, I'd like to have a one-on-one meeting with you, 9 o'clock Monday morning, would you ever say to him or her, I don't feel like it?
Yes, actually, I would, because they always tell me I'm not a member of the department. So if I didn't feel like it, I would just say, nope, I'm not a member of the department.
There you go.
I wouldn't have done it in the old days when I was a member of the department.
All right, so but you understand
which I totally understand, which is why we need to have citizens that are real citizens and have ownership and buy-in in the country. We don't need to flood every community with a lot of communities within the community. That is death to community.
It's death to communities. It is divisive. We are balkanizing our own country by design. I don't know any other way of describing this. But the antidote is for the citizenry to approach their member of Congress and say, okay, and by the way, we've got to stop calling these people Mr. Mayor, Mr. Governor. You know, when Barbara Boxer got all in a snit because she was called ma'am, which certainly was not disrespectful, if that had been me, I would have said, hey, Babs, what's the problem? Do you know what I've done? Do you know what it took me to get here? Yeah, you spent a lot of money on a campaign.
You work for us.
That's right.
Well, I tell you what,
I just wanted to say, this isn't like those scientists I was watching holding my breath last Sunday, who are coming up with incredible cures for cancer. They are doing great stuff. Barbara Boxer? Really?
This is really, yeah, thank you very much. Well, we have to let you go. You guys are busy.
Yes,
and I have to go for sure. Until we meet again.
It was delightful spending this hour and, I guess, 15 minutes with both of you. I thank you so much for taking time out.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Thank you so much. And, Ann, thank you. God bless.
Well, thank you all.
And Passover and Easter wishes, respectively.
Thank you.
Right,
same
right.
here. And isn't
Agreed.
It nice again that it does help to cement the two great religions together and show that there's far more that unites us than divides us. I think we need to remember that.
Absolutely.
As Americans.
Absolutely.
That's
I'll drink to that.
There you
God
go.
Bless
well,
you. Bye-bye.
My Passover wine is waiting for me.
That's
okay,
right.
Good night.
And it's
good
sweet.
Night, everybody.
Bye.
Okay, good night. And thank you so much for being a guest on my program this evening. Well, I guess they are gone, and they are. Well, I hope you found the program interesting. I hope it's informative. You know, I mean, that is, as I always point out, my mission here on my program, the Michael Cutler Hour. It's about providing information that you're not going to get anywhere else. It's incredible to me that, to my knowledge, nobody, for example, has talked about what I started mentioning at the beginning of the program, the fact that we now have police departments around the United States willing to hire, and in fact hiring, non-citizen police officers. You would think this should make headlines. Not a peep. Not a word. Final thought for you, and I'm going to be on Newsmax on Monday morning to talk about this. I have great problems with the so-called negotiation that John Kerry entered into with the Iranians, who cannot be trusted, whose shock troops are flooding into Latin America every single week on direct airline flights. They've been seen operating in the United States. If you remember, before the last presidential election, there was an attempt made to kill the Saudi ambassador, blow up the Saudi embassy and perhaps the Israeli embassy, and these folks were connected with Iran. So understand the level of threat, but everyone keeps saying how this is an existential threat to Israel, and it is. But when I was growing up as a kid, my dad said to me that if you're in a fight where a bunch of kids try to jump you, because we had crazy stuff back then too, he said you always want to get the big guy first, because if you take on the little guy, you're still going to have to fight the others. But if you can knock out the biggest guy that's threatening you, well, more than likely the others will run away. Well, in that alleyway, you tell me who the big guy is, Israel or the United States. The fact that Iran is operating freely within our hemisphere and is striving mightily to develop nuclear weapons, God forbid, folks, I think we are at least as much at risk as Israel is, in my judgment, perhaps even more at risk. And that's something, again, that the media is not talking about. Newsmax has invited me on to discuss it Monday morning at 9 o'clock East Coast time. I'll be on with J.D. Hayworth of America's Forum. But this is the issue, and these are not inconsequential. Now, when you realize that this one woman, Ann Corcoran, looked at the situation in her town of Hagerstown in Maryland, and by her involvement and by the involvement of her fellow citizens in that community, were able to shut down the program, that should encourage all of us to realize that we limit ourselves when we talk about what we just can't seem to be able to do. We can do anything that we put our mind to. We are Americans. We are Americans. And, you know, Anne is a conservative, Christina is a conservative, and I'm not. And we disagree on some issues, and I love having debates with Christina about the stuff. We do it all the time. It's fun. It's thought-provoking, and you really don't know your side of the argument until you have to defend it against somebody who opposes you. It's good mental exercise, you know, mental floss, if you will. But on these issues, we as Americans need to be united. We need to not allow ourselves to be intimidated, and we need to be clear about language and not allowing our opponents to label us. We are not anti-immigrant, but we are pro-enforcement, and there's nothing wrong with that. You are not xenophobic and antisocial if you lock your door at night, especially when the police warn you that there are home invaders and burglars lurking in the bushes out there. This world is a dangerous neighborhood, if you will, and the United States is the high-rent district. And I don't know if you know this, but in law enforcement, burglaries generally are more likely to occur in the well-to-do neighborhoods than the poor neighborhoods, because what are you going to steal out of a poor person's house? Willie Sutton was asked why he robbed banks. He said that's where the money is. Well, the same thing with, you know, where do you stage a burglary? In a house where people live in poverty, or in the house of the wealthy where there's fine jewelry and all sorts of other stuff worth stealing if you're that sort of a thug. So America is that target. And that's why it's so critical that we understand that this threat that we're facing from Iran isn't just Israel. It's very much the United States of America. And immigration, once again, is the key to our national security, making certain that we enforce the laws fairly but effectively to protect us, protect our children, protect their children. We're in a dangerous world, dangerous era. I ask all of you to please get involved. Again, to mention my websites that I really want you to visit, capsweb.org, michaelcutler.net, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform, The Daily Caller, The Social Contract. I think we've got them all. But please, folks, do get involved. Whether you're celebrating Easter or Passover, I hope it's a happy holiday for you and your family. I look forward to seeing you, not next week, because next week at this time I will be visiting with General Paul Vallely in his hometown in Montana. I'm very much looking forward to being with General Vallely, but I will be back in 2 weeks right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Once again, folks, as I always like to remind you, please get involved. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody. Happy Easter. Happy Passover.